Good afternoon. I'm going to call this meeting of the State Department Veterans Budget Division to order. It is approximately 10 minutes after 4. On Wednesday, February 18, 2015, the quorum is present. Members, today we're going to hear the last 6 non-military change item presentations for the division. I want to thank you members for your attendance so far. It's made the process of putting the budget bill together much easier, knowing that everyone will have already seen most of this information. With that, we're going to start today with the governor's office, Ms. Jamie Tincture. Are you there?
Oh. Are you there?
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And, if you'd state your name for the record and go ahead.
Jamie Tincture. Thank you for the opportunity to present on our budget. I have brief background information that I'd like to share, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. I have with me Paula Brown. She recently retired from our office in December 2014. She was our director of operations. She served very ably under the administrations of Ventura, Palenty, and Dayton. Our new office director of operations was meant to be here. She's dealing with a family emergency, so she apologizes, but I thought if you had any detailed questions, it would be very helpful for Paula to be here, so I'm very thankful that she made the time.
Welcome, Ms. Brown.
Thank you.
The Office of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor represents over 5.4 million Minnesotans and focuses on advancing the governor's commitment to building a better Minnesota. Our office supports the work of the governor and lieutenant governor, which includes managing the day-to-day operations of state government, providing oversight for 24 cabinet-level departments and 59 non-cabinet-level executive branches, filling judicial vacancies and appointing roughly 1,300 citizens to about 140 boards and commissions. The governor serves as chair of the State Executive Council, the State Board of Investment, the Land Exchange Board, and the Board of Pardons. He serves as Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard and oversees emergency response for the state. And as you know, he develops biennial budgets and policy recommendations for consideration in the legislature. Every day, our office faces an array of challenges. From emergencies such as flooding, propane shortages, and the international threat of Ebola, no 2 days are alike in this office, and we need to be able to quickly and effectively respond to the needs of the state at a moment's notice. Our budget includes a request for a 7.8% increase to our general fund appropriation. In addition to the 1.8% increase per year to help cover rising compensation costs, the additional $379,000 would be used to continue to adequately fund staffing needs, particularly in the areas of legal services, emergency preparedness, and constituent work. We currently have 46 employees. There was a time during the Carlson administration and early in the Ventura administration when the office had a staff complement as high as 55 full-time employees. In recent years, these numbers have been in the 35 to 42 range. We are requesting a budget that allows us to maintain our 46 employees. I believe it is important to have a team of high-performing, flexible people who are skilled at responding quickly to a crisis while still maintaining a level of service to our constituents that is responsive and timely. This budget will allow our office to consistently focus on the needs of our constituents, agencies, and the legislature, even in times that we need to address emergency preparedness issues that arise quickly and change frequently. Thank you for considering our request, and I'm happy to answer questions, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Ms. Tincture. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Tincture, did you say that I misunderstood what you'd said. I thought you'd said you're asking for a 7.8% and an additional 1.8%. Is that correct?
Ms. Tincture.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. The 1.8% is on each year. It's for operating costs. It's for compensation and health care costs. MMB recommends that all of the agencies budget for those increased costs at 1.8%. The additional request is the 379. Those requests together are the 7.8%.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Ms. Tincture, then, so the combination of all of them were 7.8. Then you said an additional 1.8% on top of that.
Ms. Tincture.
No.
Mr. Chair. No. So the 7.8% total increase, what's included in that is a 1.8% increase each year of the biennium on our salaries, and then an additional $379,000. Altogether, that is the 7.8%.
So an 8% raise total, approximately.
Okay. A 7.8% total.
Terrible.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I'd be remiss. I think I ask this question just about every five times a season. Are you talking about 4.6 FTEs addition?
Ms. Tincher.
Mr. Chair. The intention would be to maintain the 46 employees, so this is not a request to add FTEs.
Senator Metzen.
Mr. Chairman, is that Stephanie James, is that how you read that? It almost looks like an add-on, but it's not. This is a replace.
Mr. Lundeen, do you have any input?
I think what you're looking at, Senator Metzen, on the change item, it does show an increase of 4.6 employees based upon this.
An increase?
Yeah. I mean, that's what the documents show. So.
And that's what the 370-some thousand. My point is, I say this, Mr. Chairman, and you know I'm pretty consistent about it. I know people work hard in all these different departments, and I carry the contract bills, which I have for years, and I don't mind paying people. But what I kind of wonder is, every time we ask a department to do just a little bit more, you need 5.2 people or 8.7 or 4.6. And is it impossible to do the work without these 4.6? And this is not a new statement from me. I ask it all the time. Admin might have 1,200 people. And we ask them to do a little more, right? I'm using an example here. They say, well, we need 6.2 people. I say, we've got 8,800. You know, can you do it within? And, well, that's my question. And
so, Ms. Tincher, do you want to? I mean, the 4.6 is correct. Then
that's new. Just so that's we know. New employees, Mr. Chairman, right?
I mean, the senator's question is the 4.6 new employees.
Mr. Chair, I think the way to think about it is, if we did not have this increase, we would need to go back and look at our budget and figure out how we would manage that within the budget. And so after June, we would need to figure out what we would do. And so currently we have 46 employees, and we would have to look at what options exist.
Mr. Chairman, with this, don't you have 46 plus 4.5?
Ms. Tincher.
And I've got to ask it. I mean, I you know, you probably need them. I don't. It appears to me that you've got the 46 already, and you're asking for 4.6, which would get you up to 40.6, 50.6.
Ms. Tincher.
I was only a banker for 20 years, so my numbers are different.
Ms. Tincher.
Mr. Chairman, within our current budget, we can maintain the 46. When we get to the next budget, we would need to look at how would we maintain those 46, or if we did not receive this increase, that 4.6 FTEs would be impacted.
Senator Deems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Madam, could you tell me, it shows here you're asking for 379,000 additional between 2016 and 17. And if we're not going to add any FTEs, specifically, what's this money going to be used for?
Ms. Tincher.
Mr. Chair and Senator, to maintain the current staff complement that we have.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Deems.
So we're going to have an increase of 379,000 in payroll then?
Ms. Tincher.
I'll let Paula answer specifically, but part of how we are able to have the 46 that we have right now is that we have had budget savings in our current budget. And so we have staffed to what we believe is the optimal number in our office, and this request is reflecting that in order for us to continue that staffing level, that's the number that we would need.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the $379,000 that's being requested would be used for staffing. The bulk of the governor's office budget always has been and continues to be in staffing costs, and that's what we would use this increase for as well.
Senator Gazalka.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, so a year from now, will the governor have 50.6 FTEs? Because this shows adding 4.6.
Ms. Tincher? Ms. Brown, whoever, yes.
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, that is not the intention. A year from now, we anticipate that we would have 46 employees.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Yeah. Ms. Brown.
During the 14-15 biennium, at any given point in time, FTE counts change. I believe it's fair to say that in the FY14 time period, the governor's office employed probably on average 40 FTEs. After the election in November, there was an analysis done of what the needs would be going forward, and decisions were made to increase staff to bring the number to 46. We are able to do that with savings that we achieved in the 14-15 biennium to get us through June. So this request for the increase will allow us to continue with that staffing pattern in the next biennium.
Senator Gazalka.
Yeah, one follow-up then. So if it's the same, we're asking, or the governor's asking $379,000. If I divide that by 46, that's about $8,200 of benefits increase per staff person. That sound about right?
Ms. Brown?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the $379,000 is supporting not only increased staffing costs in the staff that were on board prior to the increase, but it is funding the additional positions that were brought on board in recent months.
Chairman, and the raise is still 1.8.
All right.
I don't know.
Other questions? Senator Stump.
I was just wondering, and maybe our fiscal person could explain, when you look in the book, and it has basically general fund and it has other fund. What is the other fund?
Mr. Lundeen.
The other funds refers to the governor's office funds some of their employees through the appropriations from other agencies. They make a transfer over, and then it goes into a special revenue fund, and then the governor's office uses that to fund some of the salaries.
And Mr. Chairman, it looks like that was relatively new in 2004 and 5. Before that, it was primarily general fund. Was there some reason it was, did we pass legislation changing anything, or was that just a kind of a evolutionary phenomenon?
Mr. Lundeen.
Something that all governors, I think, have done, and you know, back to Governor Carlson, Governor Ventura, Governor Pawlenty did it. And I think I recall back when Governor Pawlenty was in, we put some language in with a cap and how much could be charged to agencies, because there were concerns within agencies of having to fund staff in the governor's office. And we had that cap in the budget bill 2 years ago. The cap was removed. And I think the cap was originally around $790,000 or so at that time. And then the cap was removed 2 years ago. So there was no cap on limiting the amount that the governor's office could transfer in from state agencies.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do not have a question, but I just wanted to compliment the governor's office and his staff for the work that you have been doing on our behalf. I am fully aware of your efforts, and the executive order that you issued, that the governor issued recently, has been received very positively within communities of color and minorities and American Indian communities in the state. And I feel that we were deprived in the past from working with the governor's office, Mr. Chair. I think that our communities did not have that kind of presence in the governor's office. We were not invited, we were not allowed to be part of policy conversations at the executive level. And what could say, one could say that we live in a democracy and we are allowed to have these conversations, and oftentimes we have groups that come to converse with us about things that we don't want to talk about, and still they have an open door. But to me, it's clear that this administration has made really an extraordinary effort to bring those voices and to expand your support in, within the executive. And so I applaud your efforts, and I feel that this is really reflective of the population, that we feel welcome, and I hope that you continue to do that. I know it's hard to come and ask for more funding because we don't have enough funding to give, you know, to all of these state agencies. But I feel very strongly that we need to expand your ability to communicate with other, you know, with communities and to do the work that you need to do statewide. So I just wanted to say that, Mr. Chair, because I do feel that this money does go into efforts that sometimes are not seen by many people, but I do see it, and I applaud those efforts.
You picked one up there, Ms. Tincher. Other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to the proposal, it says that the 1.8 increase is equal to $48,000 for the 2016 fiscal year, and the 1.8 increase for 2017 is $97,000. And then the next statement says the additional $379,000 is split between 2016 and 2017. Am I reading that correctly? So that there's like $145,000 for 16 and 17, and then $379,000 is also there for 16 and 17?
Ms. Tincher or Ms. Brown?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, you're reading that correctly. So the 1.8% increase for fiscal year 2016 is based on our operating budget from 2015. So that's the $48,000. You'd add to that the 1.8% increase to the operating budget from 2016 to get the $97,000. And then the additional $379,000, if you split that in half, that would cover the additional in 2016 and 2017.
So we're actually adding $500,000 if you add $145,000 and the $379,000 for
Correct.
The next 2 years.
Correct. The request is $525,000.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Appreciate
Chair.
Appreciate you
thank
coming.
You.
And next, we have our Minnesota State Auditor, Rebecca Otto.
Good afternoon,
Welcome,
Mr. Chair.
Madam Auditor.
Thank you.
Well, we have change orders.
Great.
Are they all out?
We can wait until you're ready.
Better give me a hand. Somebody better give me a hand.
FTE zero.
Zero.
Congratulations. Yeah, very good. Danielle, you're next.
Flip it over.
All right.
Flip it over. There's one.
Wizard.
All right. We're pretty close to getting everything handed out. Go ahead, madam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Rebecca Otto, the state auditor, and we were asked to be very brief today. So we'll be brief and allow you to ask questions if you have any when we're done. What I'd like to do is we're going to start. We were asked to present our the activity in our enterprise fund for our audit practice division. So if you don't mind, I'll have Matt Lindemann begin And then I'll go after him on our change items.
Matt, go ahead.
My name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the Office of the State Auditor. In 2013, the legislature authorized the audit practice function of the Office of the State Auditor to be moved from the general fund to the enterprise fund. Fiscal year 2014 was the first year of the enterprise fund, and we're currently in the second year of the enterprise fund. Part of the requirement we had was we were to report by the 15th of this year our expenditures for revenues and expenses for 2014 and our projected expenses for 2015. So we provided that to the committee, and we also made copies for you today so that you could see what those numbers look like. So we're presented our revenues and expenses for the coming year. If you review that, you'll notice we had a small net loss for 2014, and then for 2015 we're projecting a smaller net loss. But by 2016 we project that we'll have a small net income. The net loss is partly due to some liabilities that we had to incur when we became an enterprise fund. There's post-employment benefits that we did not recognize when we were part of the general fund, and we also had some compensated absences liabilities that we had to recognize when we became an enterprise fund. If you look, the number of FTEs are consistent with when we were part of the general fund to what we are now, and if you look at the number of clients we have, they're consistent from when we were part of the general fund to what we have now. So hopefully, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions for Mr. Lindemann. Senator Stumpf?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question on the change order, but I just a question in general for the auditor's office. Some local units of government have auditors that come in, private auditors, and they pay those auditors to do the auditing and get the reports back, and then they send them down to you, and then you charge them to audit their audits. And I'm wondering, what's the basis for that? I mean, that you don't trust private auditors? Or is there, I'm sure it's in statute someplace.
Yeah. But. Mm-hmm. Auditor Otto.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf and members, that's a question that I actually think communicated with your staff about. So we do have legal authority, and we don't audit the audits. We do a desk review of the audit. At the end of the day, our office is there to make sure we represent the taxpayers' best interests. And there are many private firms out who are really partners with us in auditing local government, because there's over 4,000 units of local government in the state of Minnesota. Back in 2003, before I was the state auditor, we released some of the counties due to a statutory change and some budget changes for our office. And so the counties that get private audits conducted, we have authority in statute to review those audits and ask the private firms to conduct an initial additional work if we determine that it's required, if that makes sense. And it's in Statute 6.48. So Statute 6.49 requires that we charge for our services. And so we have an hourly rate that we charge that gets approved by MMB annually. I asked my staff, how much time does it take on average to do these? It's on average 4 to 8 hours to do a desk review of an audit. I asked my staff, do we ever ask these firms to do additional work? Yes. So we're really there to make sure the system works. And there's a lot of really good firms out there. Now, there's something they go through, which is a peer review, which is another process where you're checking to see if the audits are actually well conducted. But we have access to the work papers of these audit firms. And at the end of the day, it's really to make sure that the work is being done and that there's, adequate procedures and testing being done. So that's why that's there. It's because some things changed in 2003.
Just to follow up, when you say a desk review, let's say if you, and obviously you could have an unscrupulous auditing firm, but I mean, they're supposedly bonded and most of them are pretty well known personally. You know, the firms have good, pretty good records. So it's not really. I wouldn't think that a desk review would be. How would you describe a desk review? That the numbers are correct, or that the policy behind it is correct, or you know, we question like the legislative auditor about what do they do? Do they? And generally, you know, they have like a fiscal side, and then they have whether the money was actually appropriate or appropriately spent. So what would be a desk review? You know, school district sends in their audit and just walk through it once.
Madam Monitor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf and members, I looked at the document for the desk review. It's extraordinarily technical. There's standards that have to be followed, and so they're checking to make sure different standards are followed. And, you know, if you're interested, I could follow up with you to show you kind of what it looks like, what they do. And there's a consistent process to make sure we're reviewing all of them the same way. And, again, it's about 48 hours on average of what an audit review, a desk review takes for an audit. But it's not like a peer review. That's a much more in-depth process when reviewing audits to make sure they're being properly conducted. So I can certainly share that with you. But auditing in general, government auditing, is very technical, and it takes highly skilled professionals to do the work. And you always want to have checks and balances in place to make sure things are being done properly, that all the standards were followed, you know, that adequate testing was done, and those types of things. So if you'd like, I'm happy to try to follow up with you on that if you'd like to see that document.
I'm not sure I'd be able to understand.
No, it's really technical.
But I you know, maybe there's a different approach. One might be, you know, let's say auditors that are going to audit public units of government, you know, maybe could be, quote, certified ahead of time, or, I mean, a list of those that are approved or certified. Then would there still be a need to do the desk review or the...
Madam Auditor.
I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, I understand.
In other areas, do you see this?
Madam Auditor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf and members, some states have a system like that. You know, we can all be a little bit different in how we do this. There's still going to be peer reviews required by the standards. And I think, you know, our office is there to watch out for the best interest of taxpayers. Counties get a lot of state resources, and so we're really auditing the state's interests. There's definitely room for the private firms, and they do a lot of the majority of the work in Minnesota. But when it comes to counties, they're really the implementation arm of state government. And so we're there to make sure that things are done properly. It's not a high cost for the counties. And we certainly are very sensitive to that, of course, because it's taxpayer money. And I have a very efficient staff. But it's something that, you know, I said to my staff, well, do we do these things, and does anything ever show up, or are we just doing it to do it? And they said, no, things do show up. And so really it's just doing due diligence and making sure that things are working out there. I know a guy at the national level who represents one of the very large accounting and auditing firms who I talked to at a conference, and he really believes strongly, too, even though he was one of the private firms, that the state auditor's offices in states have a really important function. You know, there's always going to be this balance and tension, but we make sure that the system's working on behalf of the taxpayers. That's our role. So,
thank you.
All right, Madam Auditor, the change orders.
Oh, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members. So I'll keep this brief again, and please feel free to ask me questions as we go. I'll start with staff retention because it's very straightforward. We're asking to retain the staff that we currently have, and you'll see that we're asking for $64,000for 2016 and $110,000 for 2017. And that's just to keep the people we have, and that's due to state bargaining agreement adjustments that we have to make. The next change item I'll cover with you is it's called technology staffing. We work with over 4,000 units of local government plus private CPA firms, consultants, and others that report electronically to our office. So the Office of State Auditor used to be a lot of paper, and when you know these folks were reporting their financial information, it was paper. Luckily, we've moved to a much more technological-based reporting system, and we can intake most everything through a system that we've built. Because we're all electronic, and it's the nature of our work, and we have to change forms and working with databases, we really find that it would be extraordinarily helpful to have an FTE, additional FTE, to help us in our technology area with programming and database management. What will it do for us if we could get this from you? It would allow us to build in more efficiencies for both my staff and for all these local government units that report to us. We're trying to always make it as easy as possible, and when you multiply it across over 4,000 entities, it adds up to real money and time. What I'd also really like to do, if I can get this person, is will allow us to increase financial transparency for the taxpayers. There's a reluctancy on the taxpayers' behalf, you know, media, of folks going into our large finance reports, and I would like to create a tool that actually makes it a heck of a lot easier for everybody so they don't have to go into spreadsheets. They can look at a map of our state, they can hover with a mouse, pick out their community, and boom, their financial data pops up. So rather than looking through big spreadsheets, it would be a much better, I think, great increase in transparency. Our website is old now. It'd be nice to update it again because we are the transparency vehicle for over $20 billion spent per year by our local governments. So that's that change item. And that is, we're asking for $106,016 and $98,017. Then finally is my final change item, and it's called Infrastructure Stress Study. So to be brief, Mr. Chair, as you asked me, I've had a lot of conversations with people over the last 8 years, and of people telling me there's a need for what I'm going to ask for today, and that is a one-stop shop for infrastructure needs by community across our state. And what I'd like to create is a visual presentation, again, a map of the state where you could hover. And what I want to do is create a tool where you can see some of the most pressing needs for local infrastructure or civil infrastructure. So that could be for drinking water infrastructure, wastewater infrastructure. It could be for roads and bridges. It could be for energy infrastructure. Everyone I've talked to is extraordinarily excited about this and would like to have one place that they could go and look. I think it'd be a great tool for our policymakers and our appropriators, which would be you all, as well as the public, the media, and everybody else. So it's something I'd love to create. I'd like to create out of existing data that's out there. So I've actually been doing some initial poking around to see what's out there, what we could use, so there's no additional reporting requirements for local governments. We know there's infrastructure needs, but we don't necessarily have a map of it, right? DOT's got some stuff, and you know, PCA might have some, Department of Health might have some. Because we collect and report out local government financial information, it just makes sense that perhaps that it could be in our office. The idea would be to build the system over time and present the information neutrally, not judge it, but just have a place where people could go to look at it. What I'm asking for is the ability to try to hire a consultant to figure out how to find the data, pull in the data in an easy, efficient format, and then present the data in more of a map, you know, kind of a GIS format. So we're asking for a one-time of $150,000 to try to accomplish this project.
Okay. We have the change orders by the auditor. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Auditor Otto, does your office ever use the Department of Minute in the state? And could they do what you're asking for as a consultant to help you in what you've just explained to us?
Auditor Otto.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, members, that's a great question. So there are times when we engage Minute, and there are times when we don't. The times that we don't, we can usually do things more cost-effectively if we go out on our own, because they'll charge us for whatever we ask them to help us with. So it's not going to be free for us. There are times when we've compared them versus maybe something we're doing, and we can do it more cost-effectively. So we'll end up doing it more cost-effectively on our end. Just, again, for the taxpayers, you know, we're an independent office. But we do look at the minute services for sure. I had a tiny conversation with the CIO before she left at a conference, and they do some GIS work. So, again, we'll check to see if there are ways that we can work with them. But it'll cost us at the end of the day. We're going to have to expend funds for it.
Senator Otto, yes. Get that all right.
That's okay.
Get my eye teeth out of my way. No, what I was asking is, could you use someone in Minute to be that consultant that you're saying you need $150,000 for? I know you said you use Minute, but could you use them as a consultant for what you're asking for?
Auditor.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, the kind of person or consultant we'll look for will be someone who understands large data sets and where they might reside and how to actually put together something that's meaningful for the public. So it's going to be a slightly different skill set than you'll find in the Minute. Minute would be more of the, if you're trying to map it out, the mapping services, that's who we would probably talk to about that. This is more report writing, analysis, figuring out ways for us to automatically pull this data in as it gets updated, as we find it, to build a tool and figuring out what assumptions we make. So it's a little bit different in terms of skill set.
Other questions? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the information is mostly out there. You know, because as chair of the Capital Investment Committee, we try to gather as much as possible the infrastructure, and many of the departments, DNR, the PFA, MPCA, Bowser, MnDOT, the higher education. Now, I don't know how deep you want to go into the infrastructure, but most of those agencies have lists, and the only one that I couldn't find and asked the Department of Natural Resources to put together basically was a list of trails. And the reason they didn't have it is because they just didn't get around to, I think, putting those together. You had different types of trails for different purposes funded in segments, rather than like a stretch or a connection. But for the rest of these infrastructure needs, I think it's there, and it is helpful. I mean, we one of the best collection of is basically MNSCU and the University of Minnesota. Depending on what you want to get into, but they have a complete list of all of their infrastructure needs.
Wow.
The PFA obviously has a very good list when it comes to sanitary sewers and clean water, and MnDOT has quite an extensive, you know, package of lists and needs that they've put together. So, I mean, it is helpful to look at that, and it is a little overwhelming, because when you look at the needs, you know, there's a billion here and a billion there, and I mean, I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where we can fund it all, but I'm not so sure that it would be very difficult to put that together. It's constantly changing, over time, maybe the most difficult part would be is to kind of agree on what kind of a format you want to put it in. I mean, sometimes it comes from different agencies; they have different formats, but. I know we try to gather that too, so it's
good.
It's important.
Chair Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is kind of related to Senator Stumpf's kind of overview. When we approved the legacy funding, you know, I was elected right the year after, and Senator Anderson created the committees to look into the legacy funding, and she assigned me to the Parks and Trails Committee. Senator, you remember we were serving in,
yeah.
Together. And so we partnered with the University of Minnesota to do the mapping of parks and trails, and still they haven't solved the problem because these trails are, you know, funded and maintained by different localities and all of that. So my question to you, Madam Auditor, is related to the funding that you're asking for is simply to get a consultant to help you kind of take a look at how to design this, because part of the challenge, I think, is once we have these systems, they have to be updated and maintained, and you know, it's a cost. So it's kind of an ongoing. This is only valuable if we are able to maintain it and kind of sustain the relevancy, because technology is changing a lot and the numbers change constantly. So could you tell us a little bit about your vision for that? Because I'm very interested, you know, once you have what you need to do, how do we pay for it ongoing? That I don't know if we have an idea of the cost and your vision for that.
Madam Auditor.
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray and even Senator Stumpf, these are great questions. And what we'd like to do, my staff is extremely efficiency-oriented. We know that dollars are limited. And if we can design a system, if we can find the correct data, right? Senator Stumpf's talking about data. I've spoken to most of the people or agencies you mentioned. And we can find the data that's appropriate. You know, there's self-reported data, there's audited data, there's all kinds of data, and you have to know what data you were looking at. I'd like it so that it automatically uploads when it's updated. We want to set up a system that can be fairly self-sufficient, and that's why a consultant would be really great to help us get that going. I'm hoping there will not be ongoing costs. If we can get that FTE for technology, that IT person, to help us with all the data we're managing and the efficiencies we're trying to build in, we should be able to do this thing. You know, Senator Stumpf, too, every, you know, PFA, PCA, Department of Health, they're excited because they're like, yeah, we've all got this data. You know, it'd be nice to have it centrally located, one place. And especially what I want to get at, my vision is where are the greatest needs sitting? Is it in one corner of the state, you know, in terms of water, you know, drinking water, wastewater? And sure, there's a lot of need out there, absolutely. But it's figuring out a way, you know, what parts of it do you present? Some communities are in better shape than others in terms of maybe having asset management plans. Some aren't. So there's a lot of things that could come out of this, but I think it's a really important tool. I would love to develop it. If you all have ideas, we'd love to talk to you as we work to develop this thing and grab the data that's sitting out there and build it. And I think that over time this will drive a really constructive conversation, inform the process, maybe even drive some good public policy. I don't know. But the idea is to build an extraordinarily efficient system that can suck this data in as it becomes available. That's the goal.
All right. Any other questions for the auditor? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Next, we have the presentation of the Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board. Mr. Mandel, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I'm having
a relatively modest.
Yes, Mr.
Relatively modest change order.
We have one change order, Mr. Chair. The 1.8% for compensation. I've also got having handed out our biennial report because it is available, and I thought you might have more time to look at it in the coming days as opposed to later on when I come back, if I come back.
Okay.
Biennial report basically talks about our board and the work we've done to date over the past 2 years, often with Department of Administration and a Historical Society. We do the zoning for a 60-block area. We have service a board of 12 members chaired by the Lieutenant Governor, 4 gubernatorial, 3 mayoral, and 4 legislators. Working on the various projects, of course, the Capitol building being the first and foremost, the parking ramp, Senate office building, and various memorials. And we have the one change order for the compensation. Our salary and benefits basically are 75% of our budget. We had rent and land and other minor operational costs. Right now, I'm sorry, I didn't identify myself, Paul Mandel, and I'm acting executive secretary for the CAP board. We are in a period of transition. Our former executive secretary retired before Christmas. Our support person, we are now currently interviewing for that position. She moved on to a private sector job. So I am the agency right now.
Well, you did a good job of presenting that change order, and thanks for the annual report. We appreciate it. Are there any questions for Mr. Mandel? Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we have the presentation of the Office of Administrative Hearings. Ms. Post, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
My name is Tammy Post. I'm the Chief Judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings. Thank you for having me. And we, too, only have two small things to talk to you about. I would like to just give you a little background about who we are. We're the trial court within the executive branch. We provide hearings for challenges to state agency action. And by law, we're an enterprise fund for the most part. 98% of our work is an enterprise fund, which means you don't give us general fund money. We have a billable rate that our judges and other staff charge to state agencies, and when their actions get challenged, they then also pay the bill. It's just a cost of doing business on their end. But we have two small things that we do get different funding streams for, and neither one of them quite work. Here's the tiniest one. It's data practices cases. In 2010, the legislature passed a statute that allowed people who were not getting their data practices requests filled by the agencies in a timely manner to come to us and have a hearing. And the way that they paid for that, because there's no agency to charge, the legislature imposed a $1,000 filing fee. And so everyone who brings one of these cases pays a $1,000 filing fee. Fact is, that doesn't cover our costs because these are complicated legal matters, and so we have a deficiency every year that rolls up, and we come to every year asking you to fill that hole because, as an enterprise fund, we have to break even. We can't take those costs and bill them to someone else because they're not somebody else's action. So that one, we're asking for $12,000 to fill that tiny hole. Hopefully that's the smallest thing you'll ever be asked for. The other piece of our business that is not an enterprise fund is campaign cases. Now, this is a case, again, a statute passed in 2010, having to do with people who want to challenge things related to campaigns. Say they think somebody in a campaign used a false or misleading statement in their campaign literature or didn't put the disclaimer on if they were supposed to. Well, they have a right to bring a hearing to us, and we do those hearings by statute with three judges. Of course, if we're going to use three judges, all of whom have to bill an hourly rate that's approved by MMB, then those costs are going to go up. The way that is funded is every biennium, we get $130,000 that you give us as a rider out of the Campaign Finance Board's appropriation. And frankly, that has just not kept up. Our total from 2010, so far the cases that have come in, they vary by years, 1 year 22, 1 year 27. Fiscal year 13, we had 58 cases. 14, we only had 16 cases. And so they're all over the board, but the appropriation stays the same at 130 for a biennium. Right now, if I add up all the charges for all the cases that have come in, they total $565,000, and the appropriations you've given us total $450,000, which is why we're here asking for the $100,000 to fill that hole. Can I answer any questions?
Do we have questions? You seem to have done the trick. Thank you very much
for coming.
Next, we have the presentation on the Senate Legislative Office Building by the Department of Administration. Mr. Wolaski and Mr.
Given.
Mr. Chair, members.
Go ahead. Yes, thank you.
For the record, my name is Wayne Wolaski. I'm the Senior Director of Real Estate and Construction Services for the Department of Administration. The change item before you is for FY16 is $4,590,000, and for FY17 is $8.3 million. And that is made up of debt service for the building as well as for the parking ramp and along with the operating costs for the building. Currently, the schedule for the project is that the building will be completed at the end of this year. Occupancy will start in January of 2016. And as you are aware, the Senate chambers as well as four hearing rooms would be in the building for the 2016 session. So the rent for FY 16 is based on occupancy on January of 16. And of that amount, $2.9 million is for debt service on the building, and approximately $633,000 is for debt service on the parking facility. That parking is then users of that parking facility will be charged the rate for the garage on the campus, and that will then be used to cancel out that appropriation. But based on how the financing is done, we need an appropriation to cover that debt service. And, Mr. Chair, what we can do is have Director Given go through the operating cost side of the rent, if you would like to do that this time.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple quick questions. First, the parking fee, how will that compare to the parking fee that we use in state office building?
Mr. Walensky. Mr. Given.
Mr. Chair, Senator. It'll be the same.
Mr. Given, would you identify yourself, please?
Yes, for the sir. Christopher Given. I am the Director of Plant Management on the Capitol Complex. So we're the ones that operate and maintain the facilities here.
Senator.
Thank you, sir. And then one more question. You mentioned there will be a Senate chambers in the Senate office building for next year. Where will the House meet? What's the plan for that?
Mr. Walensky.
Mr. Chair, Senator, currently the plan is still to have the House chambers in the Capitol. That is an ongoing discussion point with House members. That would be only the chambers would be available. There would be no other space available in the Capitol, so that there's still some ongoing conversations about that.
Thank you.
Mr. Given.
Mr. Chair, Senator Clausen, I need to clarify. When you ask, will the parking rates be the same as the state office building? What I want to clarify is the parking rate for that garage will be the same rate as the garages on the Capitol Complex, which is more than a ramp at the state office building. Right now, the state office building, the parking facility adjacent to that building is a parking ramp. The new parking structure as part of the new building is a garage. So the rate today for that facility or that type of facility on the complex, we have one underneath the judicial building and in the transportation building, is $130 a month.
Senator Gazalka.
Mr. Chair.
Is this sticker shock, Senator Gazalka?
So what – could you remind me what we what legislators pay in the state office building
in
park
garage? I have
Mr.
to get
Given.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I have that information in my book. I will get you that. It is less than $130 because it is a parking ramp versus a garage.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe
Senator
we
Gazalka.
Combine all parking into one rate.
What was the?
I think you need to drop a bill on that.
Yeah, they have different maintenance fees, you know, different structural costs, and so therefore there's a different rate structure. And I think it would be hard to convince people that are parking in surface lot Q that they should be paying the same rate as somebody in a garage that's right under their building. Just background information.
Just saying, Senator Kazaka. All right, any other questions? Thank you very much for coming, gentlemen. We appreciate
Thank you.
It. All right, lastly but not leastly, presentation by Chicano Latino Affairs Council, Mr. Garcia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Sacsag. I am Hector Garcia, the Executive Director of the Latino Affairs Council, Thank you, members of the committee.
My name is Yurio Perez Espinosa. I'm the vice chair with the clerk.
And I brought along a lot of documents because I understand I only have 5 minutes for the presentation, so hopefully you will have a chance to read some of the material.
We appreciate you giving us that information, Mr. Garcia.
It's a pleasure, Mr. Chair. I would like to call to your attention just a couple of items that are on the outside of the folder. The folder itself contains information that is not essential for this presentation. There is a colored stapled document that has the proposed 1.8% increase by the governor's budget, and our original 2016-2017 financials describing the different items on which we spent the budget that has been assigned to us, and that one does not include the 1.8%. And finally, at the back, there's a budget comparison of our agency vis-a-vis DEED, Department of Education, Department of Health, Department of Human Services. So as you can see, our budget is minimal in comparison to other agencies, and there are reasons for it. I would just like to bring to your attention that times have changed considerably. I believe it was in his second inaugural address that President Lincoln said, as our case is new, so we must think anew. And I'm sure you're all aware of the dramatic changes brought about by globalization and subsequently by the huge inflow of immigrants and refugees from poor countries to the U.S., to Europe and other wealthy nations, and the need for proficiency in foreign languages and foreign cultures, which is one of our areas of expertise at CLAC. We are assigned by statute 9 duties, and I won't go through them. You have them in front of you. But the core of what we do is to try to optimize the contributions that Latinos can make to the state of Minnesota socially, economically, in the arts and otherwise, and to reduce the disparities, which, as you know, have become untenable because in some areas we have the worst disparities in the nation. I think that the fact that we are bridges of communication and collaboration between state government primarily and the Latino community, but also with federal, local government, the private sector, nonprofits, and the media is highly important. We need this increase in particular because it has become evident to us particularly with the OLA report that was submitted to the legislature last year, that we're not being as effective as we should and could be in conveying the value of our functions both to state government and to the Latino community. The OLA itself, in its own report and subsequently in presentations to the Senate, acknowledge the lack of clarity in our statute, which does not point to a specific goal or products, as they called it, to be provided, our limited resources, and the lack of connectivity to government. So the way in which we will use this very limited increase, which is about $6,750, if you would approve it, would be to try to improve the communication with government and with the Latino community. There are close to 300,000 Latinos spread all over the state, Almost 40% of them are new immigrants with low levels of education, many of them, and no English. So communication is a vital need if we're going to integrate optimally this new inflow of immigrants. And I believe that there is no organization as qualified as the Latino Affairs Council to help government perform that necessary duty. So I think that's the essence of what I wanted to present to you, and I would be glad to entertain any questions you might have.
Questions for Mr. Garcia? Not for today, anyway. Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Mr. Stoza?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Have a nice evening.
Thank you. So, members, next week we're going to dedicate time to the Veterans Military Affairs Subdivision. We have quite a few bills relating to those two jurisdictions in the division and for them to hear. That'll be both Monday and Wednesday. And does anybody have any questions on that? All right. Thanks for coming. Meeting's adjourned.